This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Ready to jump back into the workforce after maternity leave? If you are in Melbourne, this event is for you. This Thursday, the 15th of August, join Lou and I as we host a careers night for the mums at the Memo Boutique in Fitzroy. Doors open at 6 p.m. and from 6:30 till 7:30, you'll have the opportunity to dive into one-on-one speed dating sessions with our panelists, sharing tips and tricks on navigating your return to work, personal style, and all things starting a business. Tickets are $30, but this is redeemable on products at the Memo during the event. Grab your tickets via our link in bio. See you there.
I've been having a lot of those days where you feel absolutely in the thick of it. I have a 7-month-old and a 2.5-year-old. Posey, the 7-month-old, isn't really sleeping. And I've often felt like pulling my hair out, like I'm going a little bit crazy. And then today, I re-listened to my conversation with best friends and creatives, Annika Hahn and Bobby Clark. Something lit up inside of me. I was reminded of something important, something that I'd almost forgotten. And that is that motherhood, while it can be mundane, while it can be hard work, it really is magic. And so as I get ready to release this episode, I think it might be one of the most important conversations I have ever had on motherhood. Because of that, I don't want to over-introduce it. All I want to say is that you're about to listen to something profound. We talk a lot about how these two make work work, but we go a bit deeper than that. We talk about embracing the joy in motherhood. We talk about how what Bobby has grown up with and what she's been exposed to informed her mothering journey. And we as listeners get to take the box seat in what is a beautiful friendship. The way these two explore mothering concepts together and how they want to live their lives is nothing short of beautiful, and it's an honour to sit and listen to the sort of conversation that you don't often hear about friendship, mothering, different fertility journeys, and all of the emotions that come with it. So without further ado, let me peel back the curtain on a conversation between two best friends on growing babies, careers, and lives together. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the soulful and searching Annika Hahn and Bobby Clark. Annika and Bobby, your best friends, you're both about to become a mum again. Annika, for you, that's going to 3. Bobby, that's going to 2. How are you feeling and how far along are you?
I am feeling pretty good. I'm definitely feeling more physically tired. And the effects of being pregnant or breastfeeding now for like 4 or 5 years in a row. But other than that, like I feel pretty good. I'm 34. I was 34 weeks on Monday. So I feel like that middle chunk just really flew by. And now I'm like, oh, we're like really, really close. Yeah. I don't know. I don't reckon I've settled into the like, okay, we're having a baby soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think the third time around highlights that even more so? Do you think you felt that the second time around a bit and it's almost exacerbated again third time around?
I don't know. Like I almost feel like I had more time the second time around, I was able to wind down more. I don't know why. That was like just the way that we had structured our workflow. But also it was like a really, like I got influenza A at like, I don't know, 34, 35 weeks. We moved because we were up north where the floods were. Like, so it was a bit of like a tumultuous time. So I feel like in a way it made me protect like our little space more and get more in the zone. And also I needed to do lots of prep work for that birth because my second birth was like really healing birth. So I was way more into that space of it. So I almost feel like I was like thinking about it a lot more each day. This time around, I reckon I feel the physical effects more because I'm like running after 2 children and you get like, you're like, oh, and also I'm older, like, you know, 3 pregnancies later, it catches up on you.
Oh, I actually can't even imagine running around after 2 with 1 in my belly. That's a bit of a feat. How about you, Bobby? How are you feeling?
Like shit. It's so different to James. I've actually just been talking about that there because you should have seen the state of me. I just when I was pregnant with James, I was just, nothing fazed me. I had three jobs. I was teaching in the city. I was like lugging a case full of all my gear every day. Like I just was so fit and like able. Whereas this time, I just don't think I got fit enough before getting pregnant. And I don't know, it's just a completely different ballgame. 5 years difference. I'm 33 weeks and the toll on my body, I'm like, this, I honestly never understood. Obviously, you can only have your experience. It's the only thing you can, unless obviously you're taking in what people say, but like physically you can only draw on your own experiences. And my pregnancy with James was just like, I just remember it as a dream and I was so grateful. But this one has been different mentally as well, because it took such a long time and I think I've been like really anxious and my body's that bit older and like fucking moving's hard. But I've also had like, my stomach has been, I don't know, I'm less stretchy this time. I don't know, I've got a little hernia and like I've got nerve damage across my diaphragm, so I'm like, I'm sore.
Yeah.
It's so different. I just feel, I think the 5 years as well, like I think once you surpass like 35, you're like, oh, I'm feeling a bit, I'm not like a spring chicken anymore, like I'm a bit rusty.
And it's when that starts to happen, when you're like, oh, like, not that it's like there is like the correct or the incorrect way to do it, but it is sometimes when you are like in the midst of it, you're like, okay, I totally get why.
Young pregnancy, yeah. I mean, yes. Time when it happens, yes. But I have thought that a lot in this pregnancy. Like, why the? I mean, I know why I didn't have kids when I was like in my 20s, because yes. I was at parties, but like, yeah, I was going hard. But I think you feel the physical toll now. Like, I even said to Annika, like, she was carrying Erling yesterday, and I was like, I have no idea how you're carrying Erling on top of your bump. But she's like, I don't have any fucking choice.
We were in a gallery, Lucinda. And if I didn't carry him, he would scream. So I was like, this is the only option.
Yeah. I don't want to do this. I have to do this. Oh, it's in the hips too for me. I just feel 50 all of a sudden instead of 30 something.
I just think anytime you say hips, though, you're like, old woman.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe that's why I feel old when I say it. I feel like I've aged 15 years in a few years. Before we take it back to your careers and how you felt about motherhood pre-kids, Bobby, if you're comfortable, can you tell us a bit about the challenges you've had this time around with conceiving?
Yeah, well, I think the backstory needs first to come first. So before James, we fell pregnant. I've been pregnant maybe like 5-6 times, but we got pregnant really young, obviously didn't. We were like in fashion school, didn't decide to go ahead with that. But when we were trying for James, it just like happened and we fell pregnant before James. First try, literally not the first time we had sex. We've been together a long time. But the first try, we got pregnant, and then at my 8-week scan, I found out it was ectopic, and it was like an emergency situation, like within seconds, which was pretty intense. And then I think we waited a year to start trying again because it was quite traumatic. I think the process of healing from that was pretty long. And then we decided to start trying again for James, and I just thought, oh, the first one was a fluke. Again, first try, literally nailed it. We got pregnant. It's funny because I'm more anxious, even though there was a big loss and a pretty intense, sudden way. With James, I just like loved the pregnancy. I think I was so grateful. I think that's the word of my pregnancy with James. I obviously was anxious, but I was grateful for it. And I was in a position to feel more comfortable in my body. And then we decided to try again for the baby when James was probably about, timelines are so blurry.
It was just after I got pregnant with Erling. So it would have been like just before James was 3-ish.
Yeah. I was going to say about 2.5.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen. And we fucking tried. Like, we were at it. It just wasn't working at all. And then I think it clocked like 18 months and I was like, this is a fucking joke, like this isn't working. So I had decided, I was like, I'm 35, like if this doesn't happen naturally, like something's wrong, like there's something not right. I had actually had been misdiagnosed with a few things. I was misdiagnosed with Hashimoto's, so I was really sick for about a year which obviously, like, now in retrospect, you see, like, my body just wasn't ready for a baby. I actually physically probably wouldn't have been able.
That's incredible, isn't it? Like, that the body's message that things aren't well enough, maybe even just for you, like, maybe it's not good enough for the mum at that stage.
Yeah, I definitely knew there was something wrong, because we're pretty, like, in tune with our bodies, and we are pretty focused on health. We do a lot of things, like, we see the right people, we see integrative health therapists, we see integrative doctors, chiro, all these things. We're pretty clued up on, like, what we should be eating. And I just got really sick for about a year. Like, turns out I had glandular fever for like a year, and it was missed. Like, I was just seeing these people that were just completely missing it. And I was almost about to go on, what's it called? The thyroxine or something. Like, the, I was about to go on medication for, because I was like, I don't have time to do this naturally. I seen a naturopath who was the one that misdiagnosed me with Hashimoto's. And he's like, it's going to take you. He told me, he's like, you're not going to be able to get pregnant for a year. We need to do this slowly. And I was like, I don't have a year. Like, I don't, because then what, a year to start trying again? And then it's, then I'm what, I'm 38, 40. It's not how I envisioned it. Like, I want, I just want to sort my body quick. Seen my normal doctor who'd been away on leave. She's amazing. She's also got a 6 month wait list, so it's hard to get in for her, but she's worth it. And she flagged it. She's like, you don't have Hashimoto's. She's like, I'm going to test you for glandular fever and EBV, Epstein-Barr virus. And I had traces of them both. So I had actually had glandular fever for maybe a year, and I did not know. So I missed that opportunity to really work on my body and heal it. And the main thing with glandular fever is rest. And I was exhausted. I was like, this, I'm working my normal rate. And I honestly, there's some days where I'm like, I am so tired. I just couldn't function. So once I'd kind of knew that was what was going on, I think I put like healing at the forefront. Obviously it was anyway, but I was like, let's just go see an IVF specialist, because I just, I don't think we've got the time to naturally just see when this happens. I would like to go a bit quicker. Stephen didn't like the idea of IVF. He wasn't keen for it at all. He didn't want me taking the hormones. He's like, it's going to be really, really hard on your body again. You've just been through this. So we ended up, I think it got to 18 months and I was exhausted. I thought everyone around me, like, you know, it's like I was starting to feel that way where everyone is getting pregnant and you do have that little seed of like, where the fuck is my baby? Like, when is it my turn? And I'd never wanted to feel like that. I never wanted to be that person, because it's like the biggest gift in life. And we decided to go. Stephen was part of Miami Art Basel. So we just went, decided to shelf the baby making and worry about it when we get back. We're like, let's just go on holiday. Because we, Stephen hadn't drank alcohol in a year. He was like doing everything to make his sperm the strongest and the healthiest, because he's 3 years older than me. I hadn't drank in over a year. I'd been exercising, doing all these things. And we're like, oh, let's just go and have a bloody holiday, drink some margaritas, not worry. And we did. We went to Miami. We didn't worry about anything, because my life became tracking fucking ovulations. And my period played like a massive trick on me. Like, every month it would be like a couple of days late. And honestly, like, I got to the point, I was like, Annika, this is like a running joke with my body. I would be up to 3 days late and sometimes 5 days late. And as soon as I pee on that stick, blood would literally drip. Ugh. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Brutal.
Like, come on. It was like, is this a joke? But anyway, we went to Miami, drank margaritas that were really fucking expensive. But we enjoyed them every night. I was like, I'm having a margarita.
Inflation margaritas.
Yeah, I'm like, fuck this. I'm like, honestly, they were so expensive. They were like 50 Australian.
Oh my god.
But I was
still
like,
cheaper than IVF.
Yes.
I know, still. And then when we came back, I felt like my period was late, and I was like, as if. And Steve's like, do a pregnancy test. And I was like, I would not, but I'm quite superstitious with stuff. And because of how it had been played out, I was like, I almost made it this thing. Like, I get kind of stuck on little like processes. And I was like, if I take a pregnancy test, I'm not going to be pregnant. So I was like, I'm not going to take one. And then it got to like a week and I was like,
better bloody take one.
I better take one. And I did. And it was pregnant. I was like, wow. I was pregnant. It was positive. I was like, fuck. And it was funny because I was saving it to tell Annika in like person, because we meet up every Tuesday. And I think it must have been like a Sunday or something. It'll be on our phone. But I got a text from Annika and it was like this big. And I was like, whoosh. She's wrote me an essay, and she wrote me the most beautiful message. Yeah.
Oh. No,
we don't do short form. she wrote me this big beautiful message, like, I really don't know how to tell you this, but I wanted to tell you before, like, I put it in the group.
Oh.
But like, I know, like, you might need time. Every time I tell this, I want to cry because it's just
I'm so actually awful. Got tears in my eyes.
It was so nice because she was like, I want to give you time to process it in case it like hurts you. And yeah. I know your journey's been really long, but like, we're pregnant. And I just I like was sitting like shaking, and I went, first of all, you are like the most beautiful person in the world to even think about my feelings before your own happiness. Like, I don't want you to feel like that. But also, it doesn't fucking matter because I am too. And she's like, what?
How did you feel in that moment, Annika? Because you'd obviously had, that was your second pregnancy since Bobby had first started trying for baby two, right?
Yeah. And so like, that's why I just thought, like, I didn't want to do it in, of course, in like an ideal world, I would have wanted to do it in person, but I was like, I don't want to put somebody on the spot who I love so much and who this would, as much as I know she would be so happy, I didn't want the hurt to have to like be stifled down. So that's why I messaged her so she had time to like process away from it. But the funny thing is, as soon as she wrote back, it was almost like, of course you are. Like, I don't know why. Like, I was like, of course, like, this is why this like happened this way. Or I don't know. It just felt so like, I was so elated and so happy for her that it had happened in the way that it needed to happen. Yeah. But I also was just so, I don't know. Like, it was a really strange feeling. I was like, yeah, that makes total sense. Like, of course you would be pregnant right now. Like, I just always sort of knew in a way, maybe.
Well, when, in retrospect, if you look at how we became friends, and then also like Vala, like, I'm speaking on your behalf, Annika, but we've spoke about it a million times. Vala took 18 months to come, and we always joke that James brought her, and then like, and this like, one took 18 months,
bring this one.
And this baby brought mine. So it's just like meant to, and it just made so much sense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's what it was. It was a feeling of like, everything was like back in the way that it was supposed to be. And I was deathly sick. So I also was so conscious of like, I needed like support from my friends because I was the most sick I had ever been. But like, that was also another thing. I was like, I don't want to be sitting there being like, oh my God, I feel so horrible. And then you have your best friend who is just yearning to have a baby, probably like would give anything to feel that sick. So then as soon as like, I was like, oh, this is just, everything is how it's supposed to be.
And then we just spent the first like two fucking trimesters, first and second, moaning at each other how sick we were.
Oh no, so you're both really sick. We'll get to that. Annika, just before we take it back, how did you feel before you heard that Bobby was pregnant? Because for so many reasons that you've just said, it's so fraught. Bobby would have been happy for you and she wouldn't have wanted to feel any other way. And your pregnancy is separate to the sadness. But how did you grapple with all of that?
Because I've been on that side where Vala took 18 months. I've had people around me, like Bobby got pregnant obviously with James 2 months before I was pregnant with Vala. And so I've been on that side and like where you feel like everybody around you is pregnant and when you want to just be like, we did exactly the same. I was like, deleted all the apps. I was like, nah, I'm done. Like, we will just be those people who like travel and don't have kids. And then of course you get pregnant. So I was, and I'm very like, I get very empathetic towards people. I take on people's emotions.
Oh, you and me both, sister.
I was like very like, not anxious. Like I was like, you know, obviously we have such a close relationship, but I was just very worried like for her. Not like I wasn't like scared of the response or whatever, but I was just like, I just knew that like how that would feel receiving that message. You'd actually message one of my really good friends who is very similar in like, she's very sensitive and very in tune with people's emotions. And I sort of like bounced the idea. I was like, this is what I'm thinking. I'm going to message because I think that's what I would really appreciate from a friend, like the ability to process myself first before I saw them in person. This is what I'm thinking of writing, rah, rah. And she was like, yeah, that's perfect. But it was still very like, I was like, I don't know, like shaking hands, like sending it. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a very, very weird feeling to try and describe when I got the message back, because I almost wasn't that shocked.
Yeah.
Like almost like part of me was like expecting it to be that way, because I had in a way been thinking that it would just happen that way. I didn't obviously think it would happen that close together. Like that's pretty wild.
Yeah. That's incredible. So let's take it back to both of you. Three children. We'll start with you, Annika. Yeah. What was your career life like, and how did you feel about career and motherhood? Was one more at the forefront? Did you always want both? How did you feel about those things?
I think up until the moment we decided that we wanted to have a baby, it really wasn't something that I thought that much about. Like it was almost like, as soon as we decided we wanted to have a baby, it was like, okay, but now I want to have a baby like right now. And literally up until that day, it was all about career. And so before that, Odin and I had moved to Victoria together to freelance together, start our business together. You know, we were doing like, he's a photographer, I'm a creative director. I was doing lots of styling. We were working together in that way. So we were always, we were working for ourselves. So we were very much building our brand, like in our business. So that was my main focus. And then about maybe 2.5 years before we had Vala, maybe 3 years, we started Jane. So again, like Jane's like our first baby. So the thought of having an actual baby when we were trying to launch that, it wasn't even on my radar until, like, as I said, until that day where I was like, oh, okay, now I want to have a baby.
And it was all of a sudden just happens.
Yeah. And it wasn't even like we had built Jane to a point where it was, it's this huge business that was able to run itself and I would be able to step away. Like it wasn't that at all. And so our outlook was always, and really has continued to be, that our children would just be enveloped into the life that we had built. And the same reasons as to why we built those businesses and wanted to work in the way that we did was then the same reasons we wanted to have children and raise them in that way. So it wasn't something that I needed to think about like separately, which in hindsight, like now you probably, like once you have kids, you're like, okay, well, I probably should have thought a little bit more about how it was going to work. But because of the way we wanted to create this life and this brand and these businesses and work, it was all just always our intention that our children would be a part of that and they would just be working alongside us. And I think we viewed it in a way that like creating those freelance roles and that our own business would allow us the freedom to do that. But yeah, of course, then like they get out of the newborn stage and you're like, okay, we need to.
How the fuck am I going to do any of this?
Yeah. Like, right now,
okay, this is hard. This is tricky. What about you, Bobby? Take us back to your creative career life, three children, and also how you felt about motherhood at that stage.
Well, I've always wanted kids young. It's like I genuinely was ready for kids. Like, well, I'm ready for kids and wanting kids, two different things. Mm-hmm. I always said I wanted to have kids by 28. I think I would just done everything earlier. Like I was very independent. Like I was financially self-sufficient because I had to be at 14. Like I didn't come from a well-off family. Like I've always worked. So I was like in the work frame of mind since a really young age. And then obviously met Steve when I was 19. So we've been together a really, really long time, but we do things, or Steve does things, very slowly. I think we were together like 6 years before he even proposed. We only got married in like 2000 and either 12 or 15. I actually can't remember. I don't even know how long we've been married for. I'm like, I've done like 18, 19 years. I'm not starting again.
Yes.
But I think it took us a while to settle into Melbourne. And then when we both kind of started having our own practice here and freelancing and building what we really wanted to do, I think it just naturally just is the way that we both would think that me or us becoming parents or me becoming a mum, like we would just slot in the baby into our lives. Like I think because we had a first workshop together in Reservoir, and I think because we shared a space by that point, that we just, it wasn't even a second thought for us. It was just like natural that when we, it's the type of people we are and how that we always spoke about parenting, is that it would just slot into our life. It's like we were never going to be those people that, I mean, I don't know if it's naivety or whatever, but we don't overthink things. We just like ad lib and go with the flow. That's probably how we are as people. So we're like, we'll just figure it out and like work it out as we go along. We're not going to be one of those people where I'm like, I'll stay at home for a set amount of time. I was like, I'll just bring the baby to work. Like, surely it's not that hard.
I would be on shoots and be like, wait, so I would have these moments and be like, so when the baby comes, where will she be? And Odin and I were just like, oh, she'll just be here. And then it would just like, then that fleeting thought would just like go away and be like, oh, of course, we've got it all sorted.
And I think we're both really similar in that, like, we're creators, we're freelancers. So whenever I envisioned having a baby, I was like, I'll just strap it on. And that's kind of what I did. And I think the thing that I love that I done the most, which was completely unintentional, it's just me being me and having a brass neck, as we say in Scottish, but I don't really know how to explain it, being bold and not checking for reassurance, is if I got booked for work, I would just show up with James on me as a newborn, and they'd be like, oh, you brought the baby? And I'm like, well, where the fuck else is it going to go? I can't leave it at home. So I was always going to change and rewrite and restructure things to suit myself without having to have big discussions about it, because society's like, you can do it all now. And you're like, well, fucking watch me do it all. But I definitely don't clear it with people.
Yeah, remember we went to the Chanel opening. Was it the Chanel or was it a different exhibition, the NGV?
It was Chanel, because remember we've got the photos of them sitting at breakfast.
And it was beautiful. Listen, it was like this beautiful like spread. And James and Bala were just like the only children there. And we didn't check with anybody. We just dressed them cute. And then like, we're like dressed for an event. And they were like, they weren't even two. So they were still little, but they were walking. And I don't know, you do get like a few looks. But I think because we did it together, you sort of feel a bit.
This makes it more acceptable, because we actually had this yesterday. So with the Chanel, it was a media launch because they were doing the huge retrospective at the NGV. So it was hilarious. Media. It was like so posh. Everyone was dripping in Chanel, and here we rock up with the kids and we're like,
with the two junior journalists.
Bread sticks and things. And we're like, oh, sit down.
This is like, Chanel, darlings.
I love facing things head on. It really probably rubs me up the wrong way, the fact that we are supposed to like still have careers, do everything, manage a house, and me and Annika's family don't live in the same state. Mine's is on the other side of the fucking world. So what am I going to do? Yeah. We don't have them, so there's no choice. But I'm also not apologising for that. And yesterday we went to the Heidi, and we went in to see they've got a really good exhibition on just now. It's so good, and that's supposed to be like a real child friendly place. But the kids were like playing in the entrance, and like you could tell that everyone behind reception was getting really fucking pissed off. And there was this one chick, and she was like, "Can you move your kids away from the door? They're affecting the door opening." And I was like, oh, come on, kids, you're not allowed to be, like, you should be seen, not heard. And it really rubs me up the wrong way, because I'm like, they're children, and you say that it's a family-friendly place. You're actually launching parts of this gallery to incorporate children, but you still don't kind of want them in there. Yeah. And, like, who said that it has to be a sterile, silent place to view art? And the kids, James was, like, on the window, and the chick, she was young, marched right out and got Windex and started cleaning the window. And I can't help it. I go, are you joking? Like, you could wait until, like, they're children.
Yeah, what lesson do you think you're teaching my son?
Also, like, can you come to my house and Windex my window?
If you think this is bad.
Literally, hasn't been done for months.
Yeah, I never clean my windows. That's just, like, a pointless task. But even, like, going through the gallery, that the people, I know it's their job to protect the artwork. Me and Annika know we fucking respect art. You know what I mean? We are teaching our fucking children. We want to be able to take our children into adult spaces, art spaces, and teach them how to respect, how to look at, how to like be involved in art. But the spaces still, they haven't updated this like uppity brown nose. That's the my biggest struggle with the art world, is that it's so pompous and so annoying. And this chick was literally standing up and turning her body, and like Erling was making a noise. He was like screaming, and there was like
baby the lights.
Yeah. No, he was being a fucking 2-year-old, do you know what I mean? 3-year-old, why did you say now 2? I'm like, he was being a two-year-old. He was making noise, which kids should do. And you should have seen the looks we were getting. And it affects us. We're like trying to shush them, and then it affects the kids. And you're like, who decided that you can only look at art when it's completely silent? Like,
yeah.
Children should be incorporated into that, because how you want them to be able to be in these places. But then in the flip side, if you go out somewhere and a kid's walking around with an iPad like this and quiet, like, I don't want that.
Yeah, you get judged that way too.
Yeah, I don't want that. So you're like, something's got to just like, we've got to challenge that. And I think that's, I personally try and do that all the time. But I think me and Annika, we always take the kids to things, because what are we going to do with them?
Yeah.
And I want to change that.
Yeah. So speaking of art and motherhood, both of you are very immersed in creative work. If you take yourselves back to new motherhood, and maybe if we look more broadly at that first 6 months, what was it like trying to make work work? What were the biggest pain points? And what were the things that maybe surprised you and were a little bit easier than you thought they might be?
So Vala was born literally like the day Melbourne went into lockdown. So then James would have only been like 2 months old. So I think our experience in the first 6 months was completely different to anything else. And anyone else, of course, having babies in that time would have been the same. So realistically, it actually wasn't that hard, because a lot of our work that needed us to be out, so like that needed Odin and I to be outside of the home, wasn't going on anymore. So we sort of got into this flow of more trying to create ways to cultivate and encourage creativity amongst the community we had created with Jane. So we did a lot of like open call initiatives where we sort of like invited everybody to keep creating during lockdown and send us their work, and we would publish it. So that was fairly easy to do with the baby, because we were just at home. We would go for walks in the morning. She would be sleeping. We'd come home. We were kind of like tag team between her naps. And it was, we had moved maybe 3 or 4 months before Vala was born out to the Dandenong Ranges, to the hills. So our 5 kilometer, we couldn't go anywhere. Like, we also didn't know very many people. So there was like a few moments where we sort of felt a little bit robbed of the experience of being able to like go out and like show your newborn to everyone and like have them meet your family, because our family's not in the same state as us. So that was a little bit hard. But once we got over that, and when I look back on it in retrospect, I'm like, that was such a quite a beautiful time for us to spend as a family, finding our feet with a baby, finding this new path. And I also think it sort of allowed me to look at my practice and the work that I was doing and like remodel that as to how it would work with a baby, but also how she had affected me as a person and my practice, because I think my outlook became a little bit softer. My gaze on like the world became a little bit more nuanced, and I was able to sort of accept that there was going to be periods of time where I would just have to be observing and allowing the experiences to sort of wash over me and just trust in what I had built and my own ability and my own practice, that all of that would come back to me at a time when I was able to properly process it and properly do something with it into a larger body of work or whatever that might be. But I sort of, like, I was just talking to Bobby the other day, like, I took a film photo every single day during lockdown. So it was like 120 photos for 120 days. And I look back, and that was just like a daily practice of something to sort of get through. But I look back and I'm like, oh my, there's so much of baby Vala there. And like, I can remember each moment and these practices that we created. And I sort of like, my writing style changed, because I realized that I didn't have the luxury or the time to write these long form articles or essays as much as I wanted to, because I need a lot of space and time to sort of like immerse myself into something. Can I write very long pieces? And so once I had Vala, I sort of switched to writing more like short form prose and like little, like I called them like shitty iPhone poems, but like I would just be typing notes on my phone, you know, but it's sort of like has gone somewhere and it's like become part of my style now. And a lot of that also had to do with her birth. Like I had lots to process from her birth. So I turned to writing, and for whatever reason, that form of writing just felt easier to get like the emotions out.
I liked that. And I think that's really comforting, because in a way it shows to people that maybe haven't become mums yet that work can be impacted in a positive way. It's not always negative. There are really hard things and there's a long way to go in terms of support and society. But I really like the way it can rewire your brain and reset priorities.
Yeah, and I think because we were in lockdown, I was gifted this opportunity to sort of really just see like, oh, okay, how is this going to change my personal work? I didn't really have to think about project work or client work or going on shoots or the logistics of all of it because none of it was happening. Yeah. So it was almost like I got these like six months of time to find my foot and like find my feet as a mother and a creative mother before I then had to be like, oh, okay, and now I do need to do like other types of work. It's like I was really confident in that role and that space first. Yeah.
And what about you, Bobby? What do you recall most trying to make art with a little babe?
I actually look back on lockdown and just like have the best memories. We talk about it all the time. I think because we were both so busy in the lead up and like always doing different things and pulled, and we work a lot, like Steve and I. And then I think having that time at home where we were literally forced to be at home with a new baby was just like the most incredible time. We had a big asbestos shed out the back and we kind of turned that into like a shared studio, and Steve would go out and sculpt. And just seeing him sculpt in a home was so beautiful, and I would paint out there. And I think lockdown and my business it was the best it was ever been, because you know what it was like. Everyone decided to renovate. So I had orders flying out the door, and I have structured things in a way where my prints are printed with like a fine art printer. They get couriered to me. So it's like I didn't need any, it didn't impact how I worked. So I would get all my orders sent to me by courier. I would sign them all and then I'd get them picked up. So it just, being able to do that with a baby, it was like I worked during his naps. I worked when I felt like it. And it was actually a really, really beautiful time. And it was crazy busy for me. And it was just, everything came together. Any worries that I had, I just didn't even need to think about it. Yeah. And then when things did open up, it was like, I was working with brands or companies that I'd always worked for anyway. So I was working with little company. I would take him to the job with me. I'd take like a shag pile with me, put him on it. He was just such an easy baby that I could still shoot and do everything that I needed to do. I'm quite a fast worker, so I know that I'm off on borrowed time. I can get it done, and then I'd be editing and chilling at home. But I absolutely loved it, and I think we are all very blessed, us that had babies. And that obviously, for some people, it was really, really difficult. The hardest part, obviously, was like not having family. Like my mum and dad didn't meet James until he was two. Yeah. But work-wise, it was actually like the biggest blessing, because the world kind of stopped for us to figure out a way to be new parents and incorporate creative work.
I think like having newborns in that time is like
a dream.
The best possible. Children, like I think about it now, I'm like the same way. Like we look back on it with this like tint of fondness. But I then also, now that I have toddlers and a priest, like a 4-year-old, I'm like, that would have been
I think that too. Ray's nearly 2.5, and I think, whoa.
And that's why there's these parallel experiences, I think, where some people are looking back being like, gosh, that was a lovely time.
Yeah.
And some people are probably still like rocking in the corner recovering. Because again, if they weren't in work like Bobby and I were doing, like you were still expected to in some capacity work from home, but then got to, like, I can't even imagine how that would go.
There was probably less graciousness for those people that weren't necessarily in what society would deem postpartum.
100%.
It's sort of like, just carry on with it. You've been back to work for a year. Just like figure it out.
Easier for us having newborns, but we were then also offered the extra compassion of like, gosh, that must have been hard being a first-time mother, having no family around you. And like, yes, of course it was. And there were moments of where you look back and be like, oh, I really didn't get to experience certain moments. But I think having older children, those mothers and those parents probably were offered less compassion because it's like, well, you should just get on with it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So then you both had these pretty beautiful experiences as your babies start to emerge into the world. We're in lockdown. We start to come out of it. This is a long period now that we're talking. But if you start to cast your mind to today and what's been the challenges as your kids have grown, what does making work look like today? And what are the biggest challenges as your kids get a bit more, I guess, needy in other ways? We always think of newborns as needy, but kids have needs, like, and very different ones. So how do you compare that to now, first with you, Annika?
I think that it is purely time. Like, that is what we find the hardest, because Odin and I's way that we work is probably quite unique to us, in that our children have not gone to daycare. They don't go to daycare. We don't have family here. So really, it's up to us. Like, we work it out between the two of us. So, and that's looked different throughout the years. And as we've added a child and then another pregnancy, and, you know, we've like worked with a few different options. At one point when we moved up to Northern New South Wales after the big, big lockdown, to see if being closer to family would actually be more beneficial, and if we could still sort of find our work sitting there well. And obviously, like, we had our son up there, and then it didn't work. It just wasn't working for us, purely from a work perspective. Like, we and a community, we have a great community down here that we had built, and we realized that by being up there. But while we were up there, Vala, we did like a nanny share with one of our really good friends for one day a week, and she would go to my mum's for another day or a half a day every now and again. And that like worked for a bit, but I feel like it still was a bit sticky. Certain things were a bit sticky. I don't ever feel like we got into like a really good flow, especially when we were up there. We were moving around a lot because we sort of went up with everybody else in Australia. So I feel like once we came back down to Victoria, and as my son got to the age where I was like, okay, I'm going to go back in some capacity to work. And obviously, like, I was always working on Jane. The way that we do it now probably is the most well-oiled that we've had for a while, but it still means that we're working nights. So because Odin and I are essentially doing full-time jobs plus Jane in half-time days, like part-time days, he's working 3 days, I'm working 2 days. Well, I mean, I'm like tapering off now, but so yeah, he has the kids while I'm working, I have the kids while he's working. And I think that's the biggest part, is being able to sort of compartmentalize what day you're in. And when you're working on something that's so exciting or really exciting project, like some days, and then that's your day with the kids, it is hard to be like, oh, like, I really just want to like get into that or get stuck into
that's
that.
That's what I find the hardest.
Yeah. Like, cause you, and then the flip side as well, like, I don't, like, there are some days where I'm like, oh, like, I've got all this exciting stuff at work, but like the kids are doing something really cool that like I would love to be a part of that experience as their mother. So that's really what I find the hardest, is I don't know if balance even is the right word, or like, I don't think there is a word for it. It's just that you almost have to have these two parallel versions of yourself. And at some points in the week or the day or the month, the work version gets more love and attention. And then at some points, the mother version gets more.
Yeah.
But I think that's also part of why we structured it the way we did, in wanting our children to be involved in our practice, so that essentially we could have both.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work all the time for certain things. Like, there's no, we can't do certain jobs or certain bits of our work with kids running around screaming. Like, it just, you have to have some separation. But yeah, it's the time, because there's not enough hours in the day, and like trying to do full-time work in part-time hours, you're always going to be working at night. You're always going to feel like you're dropping the ball in some areas. And I think probably I put more things on the back burner work-wise so that I can be a more available mother, and just, but I have the ability to do that because the jobs and the work that I'm doing is with my partner, who then can pick up the slack in that way. So Odin, definitely since we've become parents, has taken on more from Jane, and I've had to really work on like letting go of certain things and being okay with not knowing like every single stylist on every single shoot or approving every single model, and just knowing that like, if I'm mothering the children and like being out with the kids and doing stuff, he has to make calls to keep things moving. Otherwise we don't have a publication. So that can be a bit hard sometimes, because I feel like I've sort of like not been cut out of my own thing that I've created, but you're sort of like, oh, I don't know what's going on with that at all. Like, this is the first time I've seen these photos. Like, cool, they're really great. I have almost no emotional attachment to them. And that's kind of sometimes can be a bit like, oh, that breaks your heart a little bit because you rebuilt this thing that I'm so passionate about and really proud of, and also has come with a lot of sacrifices for us to be able to do. Like going into print media during this time is no easy feat, and to have to go like, it's okay, like it is just a season, and know in myself that I won't have regret looking back, because it will still be there. I have faith and trust in what we built and the strength of what we built, that it's still going to be there when the kids are older and I'll be able to like jump back in a more involved capacity.
Yeah, it's almost like a bit of a challenge to our identity and ego, isn't it? To think this would have had my name on it once upon a time, but now it doesn't.
Yeah, even the issue that went to print while I was pregnant with Erling, we got a guest editor in. So I didn't even do barely anything. And that was like a real, I was like, okay. Yeah. You have to just like
learning to let go.
Yeah.
What about you, Bobby? What have you found to be the biggest challenges along your journey of making work work outside of that newborn phase?
I think sacrifice is probably the biggest topic, because I mean, I'm really good at signing it off or like labeling it as something. I know for a fact, like, in order for me to be the mum that I want to be, I'm going to have to take a back seat. My career is, and what I want is going to have to, you can't work, well, I don't want to work to the capacity that I would need to in order to project myself to where I want to go and still be the mum that I want to be. I know for a fact, and I always remind myself, when kids go into school at 6, your life changes and then you get all this time back, and I just want to soak up every single second. And I think that's one of the lessons from lockdown as well, just like how important time is. And the way I think, obviously, as Steve and I being artists and both having our own businesses, he obviously takes priority genetically by like in a biological sense. Like, he doesn't have tits, like, and nor would I want him to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm pretty secure in my role as mother, his role as father, but it's different. And in the first early stages, like, James is relying on me. I had a really tough time breastfeeding. So I'm like, there's no point in you. Like, I don't buy into this whole 50-50 stuff. There's no point in you getting up and like staying awake for me through the night when you need to earn the fucking money to support me and taking some time off to be the mum I want to be. I think I've been quite straight and knowledgeable of that from the beginning, and I've not tried to fight it. So I've relaxed into it, and I know that sometimes it's really fucking hard. Like, me and Steve, like, we are not competitive, it's definitely not the right words, but we inspire each other and egg each other on to achieve more.
Yeah. So, like, well, you're both notable artists too. Yeah. So I imagine coming like this sort of not tension, maybe healthy tension that comes with that.
Yeah, it's definitely healthy. Like, he gives me a kick up the arse, but like when he achieves something, like if he gets like recognized by a gallery or is, well, he was part of fucking Art Basel. It's like the pinnacle of what any artist can dream of is being part, and he was invited, and it's like, fuck, that is incredible. So I'm like, God, I would love to aim to do that one day. So it puts a rocket up your arse, but at the same time, you're like, I need to remember where I am at this point. Yes. And like, my choice is to, well, our choice obviously to have a baby, but I'm carrying it, and I know that my capacity, it'll come. Yeah. And it's like, motherhood is, for myself, I can only speak from my point of view, but it's all consuming. And I know for a fact that I do not want to miss anything. I don't want to give up a certain amount of time for James to allow me to do stuff. Like, I haven't painted, I actually genuinely can't remember the last time I painted, but there's part of me that's like craving it. And I'm like, I've lost part of myself, but I also know that that's part of the process. And I'm like, one day I will have so much time to paint and I'll long for him.
And you'll have all of these experiences, like the way that it's changed you. This is my hope, is that like you've let all of this stuff wash over you, and almost like it's, you surrender to, okay, it's just a season, and you do have to put that sort of part of yourself on the back burner to be the mother that you want to be.
Yeah.
But it's like having that deep trust in what you've created and your practice to know that it will come back like when the timing is right.
Annika, I think we're both like, we've got the same kind of romantic mind. So I feel like, where other people would be like having like a real fucking mental breakdown.
We're which like, we also do, like, not do. Yeah. Like rose-colored glasses. There is definitely times where it's like, this is absolutely.
I just want to fucking do this.
Yes. And you really want to do something, or you feel so like robbed of an experience because you're like, oh my God, like if I could just have a solid week, I could get this done and I've got all these ideas. And I feel like things that are like creative and art-based and like, it's almost like you do get this little fleeting moment and I can have this like thought or this idea or something that you want to work on. And then it might be like weeks later that you've got the actual time to do it. And you're like, I don't even know what I was thinking about. It's gone.
Yeah.
Like, that is sometimes hard where you're like, well, hopefully it comes back. Like if it was good, otherwise, like you just have to get really comfortable. Well, I have at least had to get really comfortable with just being like, oh, well, it's gone now.
Yes.
I think that's maybe why we've started, like, because we started Beige Baby during lockdown, primarily to build ourselves our village that we so longingly wanted. And we were also separated by states at that point. And I think us working together as well, being creatives and going through the, like, being in the pretty much the exact same phase of, like, different stages when the baby grows, I think we learned to work in new ways and we're just about to do it again and have babies again. So I think like the expectation and having someone else in the exact same situation as yourself, like you're creative, you know, you've got that desire, you know what we want to do, we're very
and you want to have certain types of conversation and like
and I think we've kept that alive. Like we've got a separate chat out with our, I mean obviously we've got multiple chats, but we've got one where we like make an effort to talk about other things. We talk about culture, we talk about exhibitions, we talk about things we're inspired by, like we'll ask
that. We just share stuff that we've seen
that's not about ask being a mother
of like what is inspiring you or like what do you think about this quote, like and it's nice to use your brain in that way because it is, it's like what you would ponder I guess in your work if you were just doing your work or you had the time, but instead you can sort of experience it and process it, but just quickly, like in note form.
Love this. It's almost like you could have your mum chat for those questions in the middle of the night when the baby's unwell. And then with that very same group, you can have a chat that has nothing to do with babies to use different parts of your brain.
I'm not, I get really frustrated. I can't talk about babies 24/7. I need to.
Neither can I. Some questions that people ask me, I'm like, I've never thought of that. I've just never thought of that. I'm sorry.
I don't ever want to forget myself and I don't want to ever be consumed to the point that I lose all my inspirations and wants and desires. So I think like our chat that's separate from our friends that are all mums is actually like really pivotal in keeping me sane because Steve and I, like he works and he plays soccer and sometimes by the time he gets home, we're juggling bedtime. We don't have as much time to sit and chat about things like that as we normally would. So having that chat with Anne.
And you're so tired too. That, sometimes I feel like, and not even in a sad sort of loveless way, that when we are together on the couch, we just want to be quiet because we miss quiet.
100%. You want to sit there and hold and like feel your shoulder against my shoulder. And
yeah,
like,
and that's all I need.
Anything else.
Yes.
Yeah. Because like you can't,
do
like,
not try anything else.
Person, like changing a nappy, some person's trying to cook dinner, like you're like bath time, there's washing on, there's so many noises. And you're like, so what do you think about the cultural dynamic of blah blah? Like as if. Yeah. Like shut up. I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't exist in this room at this moment. I'm sorry.
Our favorite thing to do together is watch TV and hold hands. That is it. That's the capacity.
Yeah.
And eat snacks.
How do you then reconcile? Because I think I'm very similar to both of you in everything you've just spoken about. How do you reconcile, I guess, wanting to entrench yourself in motherhood as much as you can while also not wanting it to consume you? How do you balance those two things, do you think?
That's, I think, is what Bobby was saying in like we have a very similar like romantic view on it. I honestly just think that it is a choice that I decided to choose like early on where I was just going to see like the magic and the joy in it as much as possible and be consumed by that part of motherhood, not the feeding, changing schedules in the trenches part of it. And of course you need to vent about that in moments as well because it is so consuming and it is so relentless and you're so sleep deprived and you don't get a second to yourself or to think for yourself. But I honestly have tried from the get-go to really consciously flip my mindset, okay, just see what watch them play in like a puddle or pick a flower and actually experience it as they are, and go, how lucky to be their mum and to watch them do this simple act and just find so much contentment out of it. And fun, like fun as well. Fun's a more hard one, I think, for mums, like in my opinion. I think dads are way better at fun and mums are way better at creating magic. So I go for the magic, like trying to like, you know, I don't know, just see what they see and really watch them. And I don't know if that's just because of what I do as well, because I'm looking at everything being like, wow, that would make a beautiful sentence, or like, you know, yeah, like explaining it in that way. But yeah, I honestly just think it is a mindset thing. And sometimes I get in a rut. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm sort of like grumpy and cranky. And like, I have to remind myself to just be like, okay, like just get back into that moment, because you're a way better mom. And then they are having a way better time. Therefore, we're all in balance and harmony together. But I think that it was like, Vala was she didn't sleep. Like she just didn't sleep. She slept for like 40 minutes at a time for her first like 18 months. And like nothing was wrong with her. That just was her. She was just a very high demanding, like, you know, I don't know what it was. Like it was, she was never, she wasn't like, she was putting on weight, she was feeding, like it just was. She just needed lots of support to sleep. And I think it was like day, I don't know, 5 or like very, very early on. And I just was like, okay, like this is what we're doing then. And I was just like, yeah, I've got you. Like I picked her up and I was like, I've got you. Like I'm here. And like this is, and I think that's how I got through it. Like, because it was really hard. And I just, every single time I was just like, no, I've got you. Like, you just need this. And like, I'm just going to surrender to this. And there is nothing, I didn't want to do any of the other things that people, that some people choose to do to like help their sleep or fix sleep. Like that's everyone's personal experience. I was mentally okay to go through the storm with her.
Yeah.
That also is just her personality. Like the only way over something with Vala is through the fire. So, and like our beige baby community that we created, that was part of it. Like we, Bobby and I both wanted this village so badly because we wanted to experience these things together, like collectively. And that's sort of where that then the No Sleep Club shirt and slogan came from, that was a part of that, because we wanted it to be more of like a badge of honor rather than something you were having to do.
Yeah.
Something to be like more joyful and more positive. Yeah. And that was always our intention, rather than being like, oh, I'm like so tired and rah, rah, because I don't think that helps anyone anyway. Like some days, of course, you need to vent and you need to moan. But if you've got something to sort of pull you back into being like, all right, like let's do this and let's really see the magic and the joy in it, and like we can get through it, I think that can be really helpful.
Yeah. And what about you, Bobby? How do you find that tension between wanting to entrench yourself in motherhood but also keeping that other sense of yourself?
I think if you look at like where I come from in my upbringing and also like my personality, I think the understanding of me as a person, me as a mother, I think because I've had such a different upbringing, and it's like it's only understandable for people, for me, like if you know my history, like I just feel like I'm overwhelmingly grateful. I feel like I talk about this a lot in the group, like I really struggle, and it's my personality, like if people are moaning constantly, I really struggle to listen to it, because I know they're in a really privileged position.
Yeah.
I've been around a different environment growing up. Like I grew up in a street that had a lot of abuse, and I've seen families go through really tough times, and it's just a completely different upbringing where I'm from in Scotland. Like there is real poverty, like there is real abuse. Like my neighbors, like I've seen some fucked up shit, and like I've lived a different life from people here. And I think my tolerance to being in that echo chamber of moaning about something, like I know it's hard, it's like you have to respect everyone's situations, but when someone is sitting in a really privileged point space from my point of view and they are moaning non-stop, I'm like, you should be so fucking grateful right now. You have a house over your head, you're fucking safe, you're very well taken care of. I'm like, I can come across and I understand that, like in our group sometimes, like even in our group, like our mums, I can come across as like, and I can feel people rolling their eyes at me. I can come across as quite brash, but I have seen it. Like,
yeah,
I have been on the other side of that. Like, I genuinely was offered heroin at like 9.
Yeah.
Like, that was my upbringing. That's where I was. My neighbour offered it to me. I didn't even know what it was, but it's like I've been exposed to certain things. So I think because of my life,
it's given you a different worldview.
And what I've seen and what I've seen children go through, like,
yeah,
we've had people, like, I've seen stuff and, like, I've not been believed. And I've watched people, like, I've watched children being abused with my own eyes and seeing it. And then, like, I just have this, like, different perspective to other people. And I can't put that on them because they've not been exposed to that. But
yeah,
I think it gives me a view of, like, being really fucking grateful of what my life is now and what I saw growing up. And, like, I have this, I mean, if you have seen that stuff, you're like, it's not that bad.
It changes you. And I could totally, like, totally understand that.
Everyone is relative to their own environment and what's going on. But I think I'm very quick to be like, shut the fuck up. You're very privileged and you've got such a beautiful life, which is my downfall as well. But I do, like, it's how I'm built. And I see things differently because I have had different experiences.
Oh, I love that.
I could also, like, I can get stuck in a mindset, and I think that's a good thing that me and Annika have. Like, we kind of snap each other out of it. And it's like, we do recognize, like, yesterday I was so fucking grumpy. We went to the Heidi, and one of those mornings where James was just doing the exact opposite of everything I asked. And I text Annika when I got home. I was like, sorry, I was really, like, aggy and snappy today. I just wasn't, like, my best. And I'm like, I can recognize that and also move on. Like, we just like, whatever. Fuck it. We got it done. We did what we needed to do. And you just move on from it.
Yeah. And I could speak to you both forever, but I'm conscious of time. So I have two more questions. Firstly, let's talk Art Mum, which is the new evolution.
Yes. So we started Beige Baby, and then we have it sort of just trudged along for a while. Like, we created a beautiful community. We created a playgroup ad from Beige Baby that is basically like our life source. And we did t-shirts, but nothing sort of really ever stuck for it. We were sort of like, we wanted it to be something, and like no model of output really ever seemed to sort of facilitate that. And it ended up just being like, you know, in the end, we were just obviously had this beautiful playgroup and this beautiful community, and we were just take photos of that and like post it on Instagram. We were sort of like, what really is the point behind this? Just like more content for no reason. And so we had this chat, this like WhatsApp chat for Jane. I was like, I want to do this like WhatsApp thing where we just talk about inspiration and art and blah, blah, blah. And we did it together. And people really liked the conversation style of it. And then we both were like, this is a fucking great practice. Like, we're obviously keeping this chat alive. And then, I don't know, we were just talking, we're like, yeah, we should do something like Art Mum, Mother Artist, something. And then we're like, Art Mum with the O. We're like, yeah, but like, you know, we can come up with something better or whatever. And then it just stuck. And this was honestly like over a year ago. And it just like ruminated. Like, I think we sort of just kept thinking about certain things and eventually decided, like, we're like, okay, actually, this is a great name. And it can be a Substack type output that allows us to take it away from the kids a little bit more and make it more about our experience, which is what we originally wanted to do with Beige Baby. And it's sort of, as soon as we started thinking about it and talking about it, we're like, everything fell into place in like all the things we wanted to talk about and all of the all of the content we wanted to create and all of the output and all the ideas. They all made sense within this framework. And that's really like, that's the short story of it. Like, we have thought about it for a really long time.
A really long time. I think you guys moving to New South Wales as well, I think because you were in a different state, we had just decided to do like the t-shirts and stuff. And naturally, because it was about the kids, it was like, where's it going to go? Are we going to become a kids agency and shoot them on brands? And we're like, we don't really want to do that. And then we're like doing all the work for like a couple of bits of clothes. And we're like, I don't really want to do that.
And like, then like, as the kids get older as well, you're like, oh, like, I want to be like hawking out the kids. Like,
yeah,
We wanted it to be more about us and our experience. And that was the whole thing behind Beige Baby at the beginning. Like the reason we wanted to go to like cultural events and art, take the kids to art, was because it's what we were interested in.
Yeah.
And so it did, it went a little bit too towards the kids, and we just really wanted something to bring it back. And so it's going to be basically an evolution of that community we created. And a lot of what we've been talking about, like seeing the joy in certain moments, this ability to combine the duality of being creative and an artist and a mother, and how those roles work together, and the output of it will be at the beginning a Substack where we do interviews, reviews, chats, like dialogues, but there'll be playlists, like notes, creative practices, prompts for people to do, like exhibitions, like way, like our thoughts and ideas on like a lot of what we've been talking about, how to integrate children into this world and how we're doing it, and sharing a lot of ideas and things, I guess.
Yeah, beautiful.
I think that's the thing that we both have, is that I think that's the main point of it when you strip it back, is that we want to challenge these things. Like, I think the world, and not like zero judgment on how anyone does it, again, I'm only speaking from my perspective, but I think like because of this world, this like overconsumption, the tapping into being online constantly, I think that like we go to a cafe and you see like no shade on anyone that does it, but like kids sitting on iPads, and it's like, yeah, our parents, like if we had iPads back in the day, I would have had one. There's no way we would have went out for dinner. But it's also like trying to bring the romance back in and bring a little bit of that tactile kind of environment and experience back in, because a lot of people are scared that their kids make noise, and you see it over and over again. Yeah. Like you see a flustered mother, like when they're in an exhibition or at the museum and their kid's having a tantrum, which is completely fucking normal. Yeah. But they're freaking out and they like rush their kids out, and you're like, I feel like if we just create something that makes a little bit easier for people to like integrate their kids into cultural things, and it not be such like a big thing, like
yeah,
we don't believe in that kids should be seen and not heard. Like you can work on ways to do that, and that, well, we're still trying to work it out, but I think like
it's seeing, and like
a lot of people maybe find it hard,
a place for people to sort of see themselves in others and like in other experiences. Yeah. Know that there is a community, or there are people out there who are mothering or creating in a similar way that fuses them together, is really our main goal. And like sort of sharing that, the ways that we are,
and being the village again for people, like because I've seen it a lot recently. There's been a lot of like a big influx of people that have just, influencers or creatives that have had babies, and the biggest point of discussion is like how to incorporate and maintain yourself as well as becoming a mother. So I feel like we're creating another little like mini village of like ways in which that we do that and how to incorporate it in little homes.
And like sharing our practice, sharing things that are inspiring us, having, you know, these modes of output that people can sort of engage with, read, consume in their own time, relate to. And then obviously we'll do some merch as well, because it's cute and why not?
Excellent. I'll be buying it.
It's so cute. We shot it. That's what we were doing yesterday at the Heidi. Oh, we were shooting it.
Cute.
And it was so funny. And like everything went wrong, but we're like, oh, fuck it, mother. That's another thing. Like, you're like, it is what it is.
It's
like,
what it is.
The kids.
It is. Vala was in like mud stained stockings and gumboots.
You're like, that is what it is.
Yeah.
And so it's like, no, I don't want to wear that shirt. Vala's like, I don't want to take the shirt off. We're like,
oh. Okay. Well, I'll be buying that merch.
Yeah.
You get what you get and you don't get upset. That might be a bit of a motto that I'm going to take into my day from you, Bobby. So, last question. You're both on the precipice of adding to your family. You're both going into postpartum again. What are you looking forward to most?
I love newborns. Like, I love the
same.
It's just like, I'm looking forward to having, it's just like the smell of their head and like those like milky sheets and like the messiness of like you all finding your feet as like a family with a new member. That's what I'm mostly, also I feel like I, like we want three children. Like I don't want to have four children. And so I think it's also this like semblance of closure for us as a family, because we, this will be the last newborn time. So it's almost like we are going into this new chapter as a family of five together.
Taking it all in and all of that sort of stuff.
I feel like I really want to savor every single moment of it. And also just like a brand new baby in like a onesie, like that feeling of their like little
heaven.
One, like you just can't, you need to like bottle it or something. Just like,
it's unfair that you can't bottle it. Just the smell. I know. Why can't I keep each of my kids' baby scent in a perfume jar forever?
It goes one day.
It's not fair.
And you're like, I know. It just smells normal now.
Oh, I know. It stinks, in fact. What the about you, Bobby? Like,
Yeah, I'm the same. I think because I worked, but I was just so all about work when I had James. Like, I think lockdown was a gift that made me stop, but I worked until the day before, like I stopped working and had the Friday off, and then I had James on the Saturday, and I went back pretty soon. Like, I think I was maybe like 2 weeks after I was like back doing like online stuff. But I think this time I really want to center on rest and enjoy that newborn, because you have no idea how fast it goes. Yeah. And I'm just so looking forward to just lying in bed with a new baby and all the noises and the onesies and the knitwear and the, like, I'm really like mother goosing it up right now. I'm like knitting a blanket. I've like ordered all the stuff, and I can't wait to just go for a walk and like just have nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I really wanted. Things have changed. I thought I was getting maternity leave from the government, and I am not, which,
how annoying.
So that kind of robbed me of, like, I was like, oh my god, I get to take two, like, monumental time off for me would have been 2 months. I'm like, oh my god, 2 months where I just like just nap and go for walks and like cook food and like bake stuff. But I got really shitty about finding out that I wasn't getting that. Like, it robbed me of my dream, but I'm like, I can still make it happen. We might just be fucking skint for a while, but whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and not work and actually just exist as...
just sit in it.
Just rest, because I didn't give my body that the last time. And this time my body's falling apart. I'm surprised I'm scared of what's going to happen after, but that's what I want to do.
And after your health scares... I guess that reminds us why rest is so important. Yeah. So to end with, if people want to find either of you online, where do they go?
They go to the Art Mum Substack now. That's like where we'll be. And I think that's going to be a really beautiful project for us and our postpartum, to still maintain some level of creativity or output, because we're going to talk every day. We're going to I'm actually so excited, because there's going to be a lot of like firsts that we do together with this baby. Like, our first outing, like when we first meet up and go a walk with the babies and the kids, like it's just going to be so special.
Yeah.
It's going to be so nice.
What's the handle on Art Mum? Is it 2_?
Oh, I think so. Let me look. It's
I can link it in the show notes if you like.
Yeah,
so you don't
Art Mum
have to go
on Instagram. It's like a double.
And then you're the same. I think mine's like Annika_Hannah.
Mine has got 4 underscores, because they were all the other ones.
Where can you find us? We don't even know.
Just go through the maze of Instagram and you'll eventually get there.
I like that.
Thank you so much for joining me this morning, and all the best with your new babies.
Thank you
so much. Thank you.
It was so nice we've done it together as well. I like being a duo.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.